Okay, what we have here is board time on Wednesday, June 3rd at 3:45.
Okay, welcome.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to, the agenda, just make a small change. We have a motion that needs to be made regarding the Brush Prairie Bridge.
Okay.
Chris can make this.
I can read it, but I think Shane has given it to you.
Yes.
I can read that
and
if you want.
Okay. I think we should set this up somehow, too, so it's not like just getting pulled out of the sky here.
Certainly. Chris, you want to go ahead?
Certainly. Council, this is a case regarding the maintenance of a bridge in Brush Prairie that has been the subject of numerous applications for some remediation. Part of the problem is due to the fact that the bridge has a very low ranking for its seismic stability and has a problem with the foundations being washed away or scoured by water flows that have occurred, and the remediation, the fix, is to go in and place riprap around the bridge supports. And Public Works has been working over the last 2 to 3 years with both federal and state agencies to obtain the necessary permitting and funding, and neighboring property owners to get the permissions necessary to do this work. There's one property owner that's remaining. They've been unable to work out an agreement. Where we stand right now is there is no property sought to be condemned from the standpoint that the county will not take ownership of anyone's land, but the county does need to get an easement to do work in the water, but within the property of one owner, and therefore we're seeking authority to condemn an easement over this person's property for both construction work and for inspection and maintenance that will occur in the future. And we are requesting that, given these background facts, that the Board of County Council schedule a public hearing to consider a request from Clark County Public Works to declare the property located at 15815 Northeast 102nd Avenue in Battleground and 10300 Northeast 156th Street in Brush Prairie a public use and necessity, and if the board makes appropriate findings at that hearing, the prosecuting attorney's office will take necessary action to seek judicial approval to condemn that easement. And that would be a proposed motion if the board were to agree with it.
I so move.
Okay, I'll second that motion. And to ensure that Jennifer has the right wording there, if you want to make sure you hand in your
what
you just read to her.
Certainly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
I won't be supporting this motion, and the reason why is that this has been an ongoing project, and I thought we could have done a more thorough job in replacing the shortfall of this area and of this bridge. We had some other options up there to stop the water from running over the road there. As it has done on several occasions. We worked in the past year or two. We've been out to that site personally and feel that there were other options, other things that we could have done to make the neighbors a little bit more agreeable to this. We did go through and talk them into allowing us to go onto the property to do the survey to look at what had to be done and how much floodplain there was there. So I just feel that because of the time it has taken and the problem has been there for a long, long time, they would go back and do a Band-Aid fix instead of fixing something sincerely. And to say that we're going to do it, if we don't do it, that we won't get some other money, I think I find that a poor excuse to scramble app off of money to put Band-Aids on something. And so I won't be supporting it because of that reason.
I think having seen a map of this very extensive floodplain and seeing the difficulties the whole length of the floodplain, which runs for quite a distance in the valley area there, and knowing that we have repaired other bridges in the area, it seems to me feasible that if the bridge is being scoured out at times of high water and that makes the bridge less safe, I do think that we have a legal and a financial obligation to make improvements to that. So that's the reason that I'll be giving an affirmative vote for this.
I will be supporting it as well, because the most fundamental role that we have, obligation that we have, responsibility, is to ensure the public safety. This is a bridge that's already existing. It is being scoured out. With time, it's foreseeable that it will fail. We need to be able to act to ensure that the bridge is that hazard, that liability is addressed. And it's a public road. So our portion on this is to find that it's a public use and necessity. It's already a public use. It is needed. Otherwise, it will fail. The neighbors are interested in making other changes in the area that would address flooding. There's nothing in this that would preclude any other measures if in the future, if there's some desire to do so, and there's some authorization by the Army Corps of Engineers when it comes to the addressing the floodplain issues out in that general area. So that's my reasoning. Any more discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any nays?
Nay.
Okay. Motion passes. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Chair, one other agenda change, if we could, so we can get Chris back to his office to do good work.
Okay.
Item 2.2, conflict waiver. I'd like Chris to talk about that.
Council, the law firm of Foster Pepper is a Seattle firm that provides legal advice to many governments in Clark County, and specifically Clark County, with regard to many of our bond measures. They also have provided involvement and advice to the Clark County Sewer Alliance. They've provided advice, as I say, to numerous entities. They have been requested by the city of Washougal to provide some work, and they're concerned that because they have represented the county in the past, that there is a potential for a conflict, but not an actual one. And they're asking the county to waive the potential conflict that could exist. I've looked at the matter, and any matter they've worked on is completed. I don't see any direct link to any information they would have obtained from that would impact adversely any county position. And for those reasons, I think it's appropriate, if the board chooses or if the board agrees, it is ultimately and absolutely ultimately this board's call about whether or not to waive this conflict. But all the typical tests that we would look at if we were to see if our office had a conflict, they seem to satisfy, and they're just working with another government that we've all worked with. Under those circumstances, if the board agrees with that analysis, they're asking that the board sign the document and waive the potential for conflict.
Okay. And as always, Chris, on any matters that regard legalese, I welcome your recommendation and seek your opinion as to whether or not we ought to take an action or not take an action. So to make sure that there's... we consider your counsel in our decision. So you're good? You are fine with this letter?
Yes, I've spoken with Mr. I believe it's DiGiulio about this, and I believe it's appropriate.
Okay. So the action that you would want us to take?
Well, or should I say the Foster action? Pepper has asked that you waive, sign the waiver. To the extent there's a potential for conflict, that you waive that. If there's an actual conflict that occurs during his representation, he would have to come back, and we would take at you. Still would have the rights that you any client would always have. So this only deals with a narrow band.
So this is the proper motion, if we were to move forward on that, would be to just simply vote to sign the letter.
Yes.
And it would be for the board chair, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So I would make that motion.
Is there
that
a second?
We move forward with the letter and ask the board chair to sign it.
Okay. Any more discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Motion passes. Thank you. So that was
2.2.
What was the other one?
That was not on the agenda.
Oh, okay.
We added that.
All right. Is there staff here for any other items on the agenda?
Yeah, we have Marty here to talk about to be part of the discussion on the conditional use permit coordinator job description. I think that might be it.
Okay. And 4.1, whose is that?
That's mine. That's a work session request.
Okay. All right. So, Marty, you can go. And that is
1.2. Yeah, that's Marty and Axel.
Has your name next to it, though.
Yeah, I know. I'll have to talk
this
to
this has been a team effort, I'll say.
Yeah, last week, you were given a draft job description, and we were looking for feedback from the council.
Yeah, so last week we handed out the draft conditional use permit coordinator job description. I think the way I described it last week is that we took this. There was about four of us: Gordy, Marty, Paul Scarpelli, Jan Bazala, who does a lot of quarry work, and myself. Just took a shot at starting with our current code enforcement job description, code enforcement officer job description, and we brought in those things that we all kind of together felt needed to be added to that description to focus on what we heard out of the meetings coming from the surface mining overlay process, as well as a few other things. We wanted to build in some kind of much more proactivity to this position, especially as it relates to working with neighborhoods, citizens, and actually quarry operators themselves. And so one last thing about the description, I think what you'll find is it, again, is a little more proactive than maybe our typical code enforcement officer position. You know, our policy when it comes to code enforcement is largely complaint driven. We don't want to be out there looking around for things, poking around people's property, looking for problems that aren't really problems. And so we tend to only respond to complaints. This position's a little different because these conditional uses have many, many, many conditions, many of which are prospective in nature. They require things to be looked at, monitoring plans and other things into the future. And so there's a little bit different feel to the job description because this person would be actively going out and reviewing those conditions, reviewing our code, and reviewing the activities at quarry, mine sites, and other use areas. So if you have any questions or anything for Marty and I, we're here. But I think you guys heard from some folks last night at the hearing, and this has kind of, you know, been an ongoing project. So
I do believe that we need at least this position. I think we both in the comp plan update and in public testimony, we get a lot of information from people who are experiencing results of specifically uses that have conditional use permits attached to them, where some or all of those conditions, it's questionable whether they're being met, who's following up, who even knows what the list of conditions are for specific projects. So I think this is an imperative thing that we do here. And I do think that focusing currently on quarries and rock and mineral mining and that sort of thing is key, because that is our most consistent source of complaints. Mm-hmm. So and for the most part, those complaints are conditions are not being followed. So someone that can read that, go through it, understand it, and indicate if there are deficiencies. That's, I believe, what we need to do. Although I can see the interest in this, under preferred qualifications of what is highly desirable, a background in quarry/mining industry. I think if we get the right person, a highly experienced person, it really shouldn't matter what kind of a use it is. I think our current issue is mining and quarries that'll receive the most attention, but anybody that can do the job well for any use that receive serious conditions attached to their ability to operate. It shouldn't really matter if it's mining or quarry, just what the purpose of the conditions were, whether or not they were approved, by which body they're approved. Are there other peripheral county codes or state laws that are associated with it? Anybody that can do that whole package effectively could most certainly do quarries and mining as well. So I don't really object to it being there, but I don't want it to be... I want the person to be as objective as possible. And so when I saw that, I thought, well, is that person going to be more compassionate about the use, or more understanding, or more, well, I know what they expect, but here's really the best you can do if you have a contract to mine or haul or whatever. So I think we'll just be careful in the selection. That's the key. And the qualifications that were set out, I think that's a good job looking for the qualifications.
Okay. You know, I had an issue the other day at the hearing also. We have a duplication of services is what would be offered up. And the things that we saw there, there was rolling through the stop signs.
Yeah.
That is handled by the sheriff's department. And if it's as frequent as they say it is, I don't know why we don't put a policeman out there. It's the same thing that you have someone running through the traffic lights. Place a policeman out there and he addresses the issue. To think that you're going to hire somebody else who doesn't have the enforcement of stopping the vehicle other than just sending a letter to them and saying you're in violation, then you have to go back and state the time and record keeping and all that. But the other thing that was important, that they showed the number of trips, which is the true violation of the quarry, not the rolling stop sign or anything else. That should be very easily addressed by what the receipts are off the scale house out there. That could be very easily addressed by any code enforcement. That being said, we do have code enforcement, and we have a code enforcement group that obviously are not overworked because they're going back and looking at old cases to see what they can bring up. If they were busy, they wouldn't be doing that. I just don't see the need for a full-time FTE when we're looking at maybe 3 active quarries, and the infractions are duplicated through code enforcement and the sheriff's office to be correct. Basically, like the same as treating our own sheriff's department. You wouldn't do that. We already have someone to do that. We're complaint driven. On many occasions, we actually have the a director of public works go up there and follow the trucks down the hill at 25 miles an hour. And the complaint said they were doing 50. They went up there and complained about the dust coming off the trucks. We had the sheriff up there, and the trucks going 25 miles an hour down the hill. So I would look at the 2 or 3 people complaining about the infraction rather than just the traffic. And the traffic could be addressed from the scale. I don't see adding a full-time employee with some pretty high qualifications of understanding the concurrency or what those conditional uses are, which most of them, by the way, have expired, that they have, I think Livingston Mountain has a limited number, but the ones that were off of Yakult Mountain, those conditions have expired of the conditional use, and they were monitoring wells and a few other things, but they pretty much have expired. Axel has gone into this to some extent all the way to the state level, and there's no violations. We had environmental services up there, could find no violations. Now, there's a difference of opinion between the complaint and what the environmental services saw. In good faith, Stordahl went up there and they asphalted the road all the way up to the quarry to stop the road and the dust from coming down on the road. I think this being an over promised response to homeowners who think that they're going to stop it. They won't stop it. They might limit the trips, but to, I don't know, I guess you're going to fund it out of the general fund instead of enforcement. So I won't be supporting it, and I say that we have a duplication here. You have a problem, how are you going to enforce it, and how long it's going to take to get the person hired, how long it takes to solve the problem, and we'll begin into the fall years, which the trips will be a lot less. So we're not going to have any violations, and you're going to be having a full-time employee. So,
do you think it would be feasible to take existing staff and assign maybe an...
But
I don't know what the workload is, so I can't really...
I assume that...
Well, there are certain roles for the sheriff, but we also, you know, every time I go to a neighborhood meeting, I hear your sheriff's department is understaffed, and to, that's, the sheriff submits his budget to us, but there's also constraints at our end. So, I mean, if I think we need to have somebody objective look into this.
We have.
And see where we stand, which conditional uses, which conditions are still in existence, eliminate the ones that have expired. But if we had staff in our own code enforcement now, I'd be satisfied if there's adequate staff, if one could be assigned to catch up on this.
We have in the Sheriff's Department a commercial trucking division. But that's all they look at.
But they wouldn't look at the land use side of this, I don't think. I'm hoping for, you know, I'm not just hoping for it. I think what we need is a comprehensive review of this. And frankly, it does seem like a lot for three or four quarries. And I have said from the beginning of the initial discussions here that I would hope this person could, once we have a handle on the quarries and mining, that the person look at some other issues that we have about other conditions that businesses are operating under in the county that we hear constant complaints about violations, that those could also be reviewed.
I think our staff could provide us today, I mean to go back and look at the conditional uses that we have. I don't think we have that many that are active, current conditional uses on those existing mines that haven't fallen out of compliance.
Well, and that might be true, but I don't have any way of knowing that unless I go do all the research myself.
Mr. Swanson?
So
you knew you saw this coming.
My goal is to make sure
would never want to disagree with you, Counselor.
That we not continually to rely on Axel, who, from what I see, has a pretty busy full-time plate going on, to come back in and do the research on some documents that are this thick, that are some conditions and things that we expected to happen when we approved these uses. And then some of these uses have expanded. My goal is just to make sure that we get a review of this and know where we stand, and give us information about which conditions aren't being met and what the steps are to ensure those conditions are being met.
You're exactly right. We don't know what those conditions are. We don't know if there's 3 conditions or 6 conditions. And I go back to, if you're going to add an employee, add another deputy. Add another deputy to commercial enforcement. We have, we just been on adding 11 deputies.
But that costs money, too. I mean, if
when you're looking
the goal
for dual
is
purpose,
not to spend the money, of course dual purpose.
And that's what your deputy would be.
Well.
So we have 6 active quarries that I know of. There could be, I would presume there's more, but we've got the big ones: Livingston, Yakult, Daybreak, which is out on the Lewis River. The Tebow pit, I think, is out there. I don't know how active it is, although
it's not active.
Well, yeah, but I know that they haul stuff, or at least deposit stuff there.
They're depositing from Daybreak over to
117.
Really?
We've got Mr. Skordahl's small pit up there. I know that we got the complaint the other day about the one in Amboy and blasting. So 2 things. There are a number of these. I'm not sure personally how many total there are, but there are quite a few. And some of them that I know about have a lot of conditions. Daybreak, that's been through litigation because of the Lewis River. Yakult, Livingston, these have large conditional uses, lots of conditions.
Axel, if I can interrupt for a minute. We got a lot on our agenda. I'd like people to offer some specifics on this as well. Is that okay? As I understand, when we adopted our surface mining overlay policy last year, we committed to do what it said, which we are not doing up to this point, and that included going out and inspecting the mines for those conditions. We're not doing that. We said we would. We have people to follow the policy. Axel, you don't have that ability or the bandwidth to be able to do that, and code enforcement doesn't at this point either. There's a learning curve. There's some homework. There's some specialization that needs to happen that this person would be able to get up to speed and focus on in order to fulfill those requirements. So I do support this idea. I support this position, and I'd like to be able to fine-tune this draft a little bit. In particular, the conditional use coordinator, I'd like to change the title of the position, and I'm a little bit flexible here, to somehow convey the role of authority that is above and beyond what would otherwise be just simply a general purpose kind of a staff person. It's to be change it from conditional use permit coordinator to conditional use permit officer / inspector. In the, I noticed there's a, above the bottom on page 1, above the heading down below where it says key your typical tasks and responsibilities, it says employee will receive direction from, intentionally blank. I am open to the idea of the sheriff or I'm not sure who would be the supervisor, but this is more than a code enforcement person. This is somebody that has authority to issue citations, to have, in some ways, authority approaching that of a deputy, of a sheriff deputy. So on that, I would, Mark, have you had any more thoughts about who they would report to?
There are a number of locations in the county that where we could, I've teased Axel a couple of times that the person could report to him.
So the complaints are fairly evenly split. When we get calls because the conditions spread over so many different areas, they're fairly evenly split between MARTI and community development, public works, transportation, engineering issues, the sheriff,
and water
public
quality.
Health, water quality, wells and quarries, and then DES. So DES also has some code enforcement ability, and we get a lot of environmental issues with erosion, dust control, and that kind of stuff. So it's pretty spread out.
It is spread out. So I would think that I would you'd come back with after brainstorming with our sheriff, with DES, with Public Works to figure out who that person reports to. I would suggest one of those three. On the next page under qualifications, and thank you very much for this draft, Axel. It's so much easier to start with a draft and then make it better than to start with nothing. We have bullet points separated by big ors. And the first one talks about bachelor's degree in environmental science, engineering, geology, planning, zoning. I'm thinking none of those apply. That's the wrong kind of, I would not suggest any of those. Instead, the other bullet points that talk about experience conducting code violation investigations, yes. Building inspector, even building inspector is kind of related by, but in any case, that person's going to become a specialist by studying the conditions, which are very finite and very knowable by that person. And the main thing, the qualifications that that they will need to be able to exercise, the skills they need to exercise, is be able to, very much like an officer, be able to step into a situation, assess it, find out what's wrong, and work with the parties that are quite often adversarial, and conflict resolution and being able to exercise authority in an appropriate way and build relationships. So I would strike the first two bullets under qualifications, strike those out, and keep the rest of them. And I would say also diminish the building inspector certification. This is not building inspection. This has to do with quarry conditions and hauling. So I would strike the building inspection part of it.
Well, a problem that I'd have about that is this has to be, if this person would be issuing citations,
then there's authority. He could write
you
a letter.
You need to have some qualification to write a citation, and some of that is going to require some kind of professional accomplishment or certification.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is, I don't know what that would be, but otherwise it's like just a letter of opinion. So for a citation to stand is legal here?
No.
Oh.
Well, we have code.
In code enforcement, we have citation authority.
Mm-hmm.
Civil citation authority.
Okay, but don't you require a certain level of training and knowledge before you would allow a person to do that?
I believe under the civil citation that there's, I mean, it's all protocol laid out under the civil citation authority. And then
you have a code provision, and then you have a condition that doesn't comply with the code.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. I can help there, on the second page bottom under additional qualifications, it says the code enforcement officer must obtain American Association of Code Enforcement Zoning Inspector, and I would strike the building inspector part of that, within 2 years of hire date. I would think that we would make sure that they're certified, that they have the right credentials that would ensure that they have the capacity and the experience and the competency to issue informed, appropriate citations.
That was my point.
Yeah, on day one?
Yes, on day one. We wouldn't wait till the time that they're...
especially given that this is a two-year project position.
Yeah,
they obtain certification, and then we let them go.
Right, that's an upfront requirement.
They go find a job that's permanent.
Right.
David, I recommend that you go back and make the changes to this and bring back the changes to the board.
Good idea.
Instead of trying to do it now.
Okay.
It's nearly 4:30 already.
I'll be happy to
do
that. Okay. So let's, I'll bring that back. I'm signing up to propose a draft amendments. So that was...
Me too.
Let's go back to 1.1, okay?
Okay, approval of minutes.
I have some corrections when you're ready to put it on the table.
And what?
1.1 in the minutes.
Oh.
Let me just share with them.
Can you make a motion?
For the minutes? Motion, I can amend it.
Thank you, Marty.
I make a motion to approve the
May 27.
Clark County Councilor's board time minutes of May 27.
Oh, second that.
Okay. I move that we make these following corrections. On page 1, there's a typo under the first heading. It says Medor read his position on the topic. He stated that he continues to make plea to. I would replace the words make plea with the one word appeal. And I'll hand this in to you, Mark, so that Jennifer can get it exactly.
Right.
On the second page, under conditional use permit coordinator, it says, Axel Swanson, senior policy analyst, provided some feedback and presented. Medor stated he would like more time to review, then come back to it another time. I would rephrase that to say, to strike more time, and say, and to make it read this way. Medor stated he would like to review the draft and then come back to and then come back next week.
So you're only adding the words, the draft?
Draft.
I'm striking the words more time. And I'm, after the word review, I'm adding the draft and. And then...
Come back next week.
And
I'm amazed.
Then come back next week in place of to it another time.
Okay. I'm amazed that you can remember what you said.
Well,
that's pretty accurate. That's
under the next heading, under review of HB 1645 and HB 2211, I would add the word in the second sentence after the word sampling. I would add the word vaping products. It says Milky inquired about sampling. Period. And it was really Milky inquired about sampling vaping products. Period. Those are the only changes I suggest that we make.
Okay. Those are relatively straightforward. Could I suggest you approve the minutes subject to those? We'll get the changes made, and then you can sign.
Yes. Okay. Why don't we do this, since the motion's already on the table. My motion was to approve those, amend it with that. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second the amendment.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Okay.
Any more discussion on the minutes? All in favor of approving the minutes as amended?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. Okay. There you go, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay. That was 1.1. Let's go to 1.3. Matt Axel, that's you.
Okay. We'll start with... the hardest one, or the one we have the least information on thus far, which is the Oregon Department of Transportation's efforts to secure a Tiger Grant. Jeff Swanson's here to back me up on this, but basically we have prepared a letter in one of the red envelopes. We received some correspondence from the Oregon Department of Transportation asking us to support their effort to secure a Tiger Grant, which is a federal grant which will go to helping to repair some rail here in Northern Oregon to alleviate a bottleneck, open up the freight line, and create less delay not only in freight but also passenger rail. That will have a positive impact on Clark County, not only in Oregon, and so they're just asking a supplemental letter to go along with their packet for the grant, and so that's what you have before you. It's written out to the United States Department of Transportation Secretary Fox saying, this will help. This will help in our area.
It has been signed.
Thank you, sir.
Well, let me just, because I haven't seen the actual document that this talks about, I trust that what you have there, it conveys exactly what that does, and there's nothing in there that it, some other agenda, like also, by the way, approving light rail or something like that. I assume there's nothing like that. This is just
Jeff,
what you say here, right?
If it is in there, then it's Jeff's fault. Jeff. I will take zero credit for that.
You might want to pack your bags.
Okay. All right. Then we've signed it. That's our action. We signed it.
Okay.
Okay.
There's another. So are you good with that one? The next two letters, there's a whole bunch of them for you to sign because it's going to our legislative delegation. You'll remember Dr. Melnick came last week and asked that you all support some legislative activity going on related to his department and the health of Clark County. So the first letter was with regard to House Bill 1645 and House Bill 2211. Both those bills would have impact on how e-cigarettes and vaping products are regulated, and then how revenue is collected on the sale of those.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Senator King is the chairman of transportation.
Yeah, and so he is. I think he has a tiny portion of Clark County in his district, and so we're sending this out to, we'll send it out to every legislator that's within our county or that has a district or in our county, and so I think Senator King has a piece.
Okay.
Of it. So
like
it's going to our whole delegation.
Yeah, it's like Andrew Wickard has
one
a little
one
piece.
Of many.
One of many.
Okay.
And so.
Yeah, it was the 15th.
Just as an overview, House Bill 1645, the main point of that was it would create a regulatory system.
Excuse me,
yes, sir.
You got two different letters here. We just talked about Curtis King's letter.
Yeah, they're both addressed to Curtis King.
Okay, let's do one at a time.
Yeah, so I'm trying to focus on the one. It's actually one pager, not two. It says Clark County Board of Health support for House Bill 1645, and okay. It talks about the e-cigarettes and vaping products.
Okay.
And it's got two bullets right in the middle of the page.
Yeah,
you got it there.
I'm looking at it. I got some modifications I'd like to offer in there. But I'll leave.
Okay.
Open the door for my.
It's already been. Are they really major?
Well, yes. If you want to hear it.
I would like to have heard it before we get in here.
Well, I don't know how we could do that. The first one is this. That bill, as I understand it, well, there's two of them here. One of them adds a 40% or a 60% tax on top of vaping products.
House Bill 2211, correct.
And I can understand a sin tax if you're going to add for cigarettes or something that's going to be very known to cause major health problems. We've all heard lots of testimony that this is a far better alternative to cigarettes, and that vaping isn't necessarily unhealthy in comparison. I consider adding such a tax on that business to be anti-business, and I do not support the idea of adding 40% to 60% tax on top of it.
And
that's
I,
not what we're asking.
I anticipated that, Counselor, and so I tried very. And that was a difficult portion of writing this letter. I tried very hard on House Bill. You'll notice the letter is very clear on 1645 that we support the regulatory environment to protect minors from getting these products. I did not say anywhere in this letter that we support House Bill 2211. What I did say is that if they should pass that bill, which does include a tax increase in it, that we would expect an equitable share to come back to local health departments. I tried to word that appropriately. So if you have an issue with it, then we can rewrite
it. Well, I look at the opening sentence. This is the Clark County Board of Health, that's us, is writing to inform you of its support for House Bill 1645. And inclusion of equitable revenue sharing in House Bill 2211. Even though we read that very carefully and it says, well, we're not necessarily saying we're supporting House Bill 2211, it could easily come across as saying we support both of those bills. And I would suggest instead that we convey that we do not support adding the 60% tax to vaping products, but however, if that bill passes, we support the idea of the equitable of that money flowing back to the health department.
Okay. Like I said, I struggle with that. I understood the issue, but we can make it clear.
I just don't want to come across as being pro 60% tax on any relatively new industry.
On the second bullet, it's more inflammatory because if it passes, it's going to have a 60% increase. We're asking for 40% of that.
So, yes, I understand there's some good things that are in here, and we support the good things, but I'm not pro 60% sales tax on any industry. I just wanted to make that. If we could amend it, you could reword it, I'd be willing to sign it as long as we make that clear.
Well, none of us are interested in the 60% tax, and we have made that clear in our discussions, and I think it's clear in the letter. That we're not supporting that tax. However, if it's imposed, we do expect equitable revenue sharing.
Well, my concern is that they haven't heard our discussions. All they see is this letter. And I could easily, if I was to read that letter, I expect they're not going to study our letter. They're going to look and see, do they support it or oppose it? And I want to make sure that they know that we oppose the idea of adding a 60% tax to a new business. And if you're going to do it, at least make sure that that's put to good use. I see this as supporting the bill in general, which isn't specific enough. I want to make sure that we don't come across as being supportive of that tax.
So that second little paragraph there is where I tried to capture that, but I can make that stronger, where it starts, we requested...
The first paragraph.
If you can somehow make sure that we have what we support and what we oppose as the components of that, I would be good with that. As is, I don't think it's strong enough.
Yeah, why don't you break the first sentence into two pieces? Say that the Board of Health is writing to inform you of its support for House Bill 1645, period. And then discuss House Bill 2211, that though we don't support the passage of that bill, should it pass, we request...
Yeah, something
40%.
Like that. So I'm sure you can work out those details. But that I would be much more willing to sign on to a letter that made the plus and the minus is more clear than it is now.
Okay, is that the only change contemplated on that?
You agree, Tom?
I'm sorry. You were talking about one, you were talking
about
the
other.
Well,
we'll just split the first sentence into two pieces. We'll end it here, and then we'll have another sentence talking about, although we don't support the passage of House Bill 2211, should it pass, we request 40% of the revenues be shared with
that
public
works.
Health departments.
That works.
Okay. I got that echo?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I can fix it.
Okay.
Thank you, Mark. That's a real good suggestion. Okay, so we'll check that off. And that would be, that's for that one letter. You got the other one that talks about the
other one there. Dr. Melnick talked with you about last week. It's the impacts of cutting the coordinated prevention grant Southwest enforcement budget, and we would basically drop us from the statewide $29 million to $15 million, which would have a significant impact on our solid waste program. So that was more or less a form letter he presented to you last week.
Yeah, and Axel just tidied it up.
We cleaned it up. Yeah. Right? Credit goes to Holly Gilbert.
Are you all good in that?
I'm good with it.
Okay.
Okay. If we sign that, that's our action.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So that would be 1.3. Moving on to.
No, that's the.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Those will have to be redone.
Yeah.
2.1, constituent request to board members asking for resolution to land use issues. Stuart.
Yeah. So, in the last several weeks. I've had a number of people that have approached me directly because they have property that is in some kind of zoning complication, comp plan complication, boundary complication, or whatever. Examples of it have been people that are coming to us as counselors telling us they have a troubled parcel or parcels. For example, two cases. One case is Ridgefield, property that's in the Ridgefield urban growth boundary designated as agriculture, it was included in coming out or not being brought into the urban growth boundary for certain reasons. And so the people are kind of in limbo because they're sort of in no man's land. And it only recently came to their attention. So they went to Ridgefield, whose jurisdiction it is, and Ridgefield said, just, oh, we missed it in the GMA update. So just go talk to the county and they can just fix it in the comp plan. Same is true of a situation out in Battleground. So, and then I've had other people call me about other kinds of trouble. What I see is there various people are going to all of us. We need a process for dealing with that. So I know what you're getting, mm-hmm. and I know what you're getting, you know what I'm getting, because what I'm afraid is, what I suggested was, you need to go back to Ridgefield and tell them it's their responsibility. If it was a mistake, they need to send us a letter. And their jurisdictions, they're saying their jurisdictions are telling them, take it to Clark County and they can add this in at the last minute. And I'm going, there is no more last minute. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you could just let this one parcel in, well, then we're going to have to let everybody else's. So we need to get, in my estimation, we need to get our arms around this and know who's working on what and what's being done. And really, I don't think we can wing it. I don't want to be advising people the way necessarily out of their difficulty when all I know is what they're telling me. And I believe they've all been truthful. But did Ridgefield really tell them no?
Excuse me.
Okay. Are you referring to Bev?
No, that's a different person. I don't even know who Bev is, but you do. So...
Yeah.
And really, well, I don't want to continue this until Mr. Medora is back, because okay. I think what we need to do is we need to develop a process for this, that if somebody comes to one of us, it needs to go kind of into a central person. And I don't want to just tell them, go talk to Oliver. You know, I mean, we should have a person that we can be assured will listen to the person. Well, and I've
proved
even...
the point.
I have seen... I got a copy of an email the other day that was something that had come to me and Mador, and he sent you an email saying fix it or whatever it was. But
are you
the central hub?
Usually.
We need to have a defined process.
He's going to go turn. He gives it over to the director of that department.
Yeah, Marty gets a lot of these.
Yeah, so does this go into the black hole of somebody being stuck forever? I need feedback about what we do about it.
Sure. We've had this even before the charter has been a problem.
Well, no, and this happens every comp plan for jurisdictions.
No, it happens every day. And regardless of what the problem was, he would be working on it, I would be working on it, and we have a duplication or triplication of all the work. And then when Ed Barnes came here, they all went to him.
So it
goes right down the line.
But people hearing from three different counselors, you can get
three different
answers or pieces of advice, and that isn't fair to them.
Yeah.
It's fair to them that we listen, that we take any documents and any information they have, but a central place for those to go with feedback to us so that when that person calls us in 30 days, we'll be up to speed on what's happened. So
I have an idea. that you might consider. Something that's just really, really simple that doesn't require us to create a database or look on the computer. We can just simply put a little whiteboard outside each of our offices and just say basically what we're, you know, the different topics that we're working on. And if we get a constituent request, we can take and say, oh, I see somebody else is already working on it.
Well, I think we should send them to a central hub and not try to work them up ourselves. And I think that should be Mark or a person designated by Mark so that all of us, and where we get feedback about what happens to the...
Tom? When someone contacts you, they assume you are their representative. Now, I know under the charter, they remove that.
Well, but
we still... But that individual is expecting an answer back from you.
Yeah.
The representative. So if you get a problem, I suggest you write it up or write the problem up, give it to Mark. Mark can give it to the director. The director will find out who's been working on it. They will come up with an answer. Yeah. I don't like it. He'll give you back a written response as to why they can't do it.
I don't want to assume we can't do it.
Well, frequently we can.
They've called you already because the department has already turned them away or said that they have to do something else or they're required to do something else. So it's a very awkward place. I'm not quite sure. You know, what's your solution?
Whiteboard.
Outside to get your offices. It doesn't have to say what we're doing. Just simply list the project that we're on.
So I'd have to jump up off my desk. Put them on hold, run out in the hallway and check all the whiteboards.
I'm open for better ideas.
What would happen. Hey, call them quick. Hey, I solved your problem, me and me alone.
This is really not about who's solving the problem. This is really about who's taking ownership of the problem. When a citizen calls and they appeal to one of their elected representatives, at that point, if it's our office, if it's my office, I take ownership of the project. Anna, you assist with that, and we ensure that even if we're going to pass forward that on to Mark, or somehow we get some kind of resources assigned to solving that, we make sure that action happens. It doesn't fall through the crack. That then we respond back to the citizen that check it off list, get it done. Anna.
So our process is. You know, this has been an ongoing thing for forever, really.
Mark.
Our process has been that, especially since the charter passed, but always before then, is that if we get a constituent concern, we do some research either through Axel or Peter. They'll do some research for us, maybe bring it up. We get as much upfront information as we can, but since the charter passed, it all funnels through our county manager. And at that point, he really is the hub, because at that point, he's going to see it from Councillor Stewart, he's going to see it from Councillor Milkey, he's going to see it from Councillor Medora's office, and it's all funneling through him. And so then he's going to take action on that, and it's a huge additional burden on the county manager to do that, but it's required, and so he goes through his departments, and they come back through him and answer us. Sometimes because there's such a large amount of requests coming in through all three councilors, there is a jam up, and sometimes the feedback that the councilors would like to have so that they can go to their constituents really takes a long time. Sometimes it gets through quickly. Sometimes we don't hear feedback for quite some time. So maybe county manager would like to get some additional help with that, delegate some of that responsibility. He's able to do that.
So we need that extra FTE that we got to include.
Well, I'm not satisfied. I don't think that we really get on a solution for this, and it can never be 100% solved, because what I don't want to change is a person's ability to come in here and meet with a counselor over whatever they want to talk about. I don't want to see that changed, and I don't want somebody to want to see me and lay out a problem, and for me to be told, oh, well, you can't even talk to them about that, because that's part of our role and responsibility.
You can talk to them.
Well, so, but the question is, do we give them conflicting feedback? Do we give them accurate information about what steps they can take to solve their problems, and so on and so forth? And I think the advice they're going to get can be pretty varied, so that's not necessarily fair to them. So I see this developing, and I don't think we've hit on it a solution, but maybe we can think about it and, you know, see if some future board time. And I want to stay away from a templated, you know, a strongly templated set of rules and regulations on it. I don't, because we need to be human and contact and have contact with people who have human problems. So, actually, I like the whiteboard idea for Peter and Jeff. Because I know, seriously, I don't know what they're working on or when they're in the middle of a project, and you'd have to have a pretty big whiteboard.
You might have to have a pretty big whiteboard, because you guys have I work most closely with Peter, and Peter, you have a pretty long list. And so an electronic whiteboard might...
Not from me.
And not from me. So I guess you have
to... And I'll make you say it.
But we have started this.
I
get
my phone number out to a lot of people.
We have started because as a staff, we have the same conversation. Because what you don't... I mean, you do understand this, but there's the folks who contact you, but then there's just the folks who walk in, email, call, show up. And we just deal with those, but... We have the same issue as staff. Is Linnea working with somebody? Is Peter? Am I? So trying to communicate centrally just so that we're not both working on the same issue.
And that is what would be really important, because if somebody comes in to talk to me and they've already sat down and you're already in the process of putting information together or whatever, then it's time when I can talk about it. But not if I don't know you're working, and if they're coming to you and they're coming to us, you know, we need to close that gap. So.
Yeah, good.
Something might work if we had a central hub on our computer. So, for example, if Bev come to me and I start dealing with her, I would forward into the hub of Bev and my response and what I'm doing. And then if you get one from Bev, then you would look at the hub to see if anything is in there. That's one way. The other way is that what we've done in the past is that I will include you or David in the email that I respond to somebody else with.
Which is informational only.
And David has done that back with me, or Anna has. And I said, oh, you're working with that. So I just delete mine. Or I could email those people back and say, I see that you're working with Dr. Mador. He'll be getting back with you. At least that helps. It doesn't fix it, but it helps.
I think your suggestion that we think about this is a good idea.
Yes, sure. Yeah.
So
in the meantime,
can bring it back.
It would just be a good practice if we're going to think about this as a significant project, or before we invest significant time on something, good idea to touch bases with Mark or Axel or Peter to see if we're beginning to duplicate somebody else's work.
Well, and I think we're already doing that.
Just one other last comment. The charter does touch on this subject, so you may want to go back to the document to be sure. It does touch on the subject of processing of constituent.
It does. Let me weigh in a little bit on that, Anne, because how we implement the charter is it gives us some discretion as to how to do that.
Yeah, it's pretty
and
possible.
Certainly the charter as law needs to be complied with. However, my interpretation of how that gets complied
is I will liberally construe it to serve the citizens. I will, and I do not subscribe to saying, well, we just got to refer you to staff, when they might be having, the staff might be the problem that they're needing help from. So I will take ownership of citizen requests and problems to go to bat for them, to work with, and if that involves going passing it to Mark, and then my responsibility is to make sure that I get something back from Mark, to make sure that it, because with all the different stuff everybody's dealing with around here, we want to make sure that we follow through, take ownership, and then even though that Mark may and his staff may have been the ones to actually do the work to figure out what the problem was and provide a solution, and then it's our responsibility to get back directly with the constituent. We serve the citizens, and the redress of grievance, they should be able to talk to the elected representatives and get an answer and relief from the elected representatives. We're responsible to ensure that the staff has everything they need to succeed, but it's our responsibility to communicate two-way with the constituents.
I imagine at the very minimum you want to know that it was addressed and how it was addressed.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not going to pass the buck and say, well, I passed that on, what's next? I want to make sure that if I pass it on,
works.
We need to be
keep that license plate number.
And sometimes they're coming to us after they've had frustration with what should be their primary jurisdictions.
Yeah.
So that then, a catalog of those difficulties can give us other kinds of...
And related to that, what can happen is we could... I would just paint the two extremes. On one extreme, the citizen says, here's the problem. We pass it to staff. Mark passes it to staff. Staff comes back and say, that's the policy, that's the thing, that's the rules, and come back and say, that's the answer. In reality, it could be identifying a deficiency or a problem or a complexity in the code and policy that can be improved, and that problem could be a catalyst to identify it so that we can think big picture wise, why is the staff constrained to do things like that when there's a better way? So for us to stay tuned in with it helps us to make sure that the policy serves us, we don't serve the policy.
Right.
Okay. So I guess the solution for now is keep thinking and brainstorm or communicate before you invest a lot of time. Yes, sir.
Second aspect of what she brought up was one specific request specifically related to the comp plan update, mm-hmm. such as a zoning request or please include me in the urban growth boundary. All of those requests should get sent to planning so that they have a copy of those. And you and I just briefly discussed this the other day. Maybe we need to have a work session from planning so that they go over with the counselors how they handled each of those individual requests, or are they just going to discount them all and not include them? I don't know if they're...
I don't think we need a work session for that, but we
or
do
just a
need...
Report.
A report would be...
Well, that's an issue this year because we don't have an annual docket. And now, we knew that going into the year, but not every individual in the county knew that. So we don't have an annual docket this year for people to present the council with these concerns about zoning changes and mistakes on maps. So that we... This is going to happen more this year because there is no annual process to fix it.
I expect there ought to be a list, though, when it comes to zoning. Mm-hmm. They got tax ID numbers for the lots, and they got the request, what is it? And it's just, because if we just submit it to them, we assume that it's going to be addressed, and maybe it won't. That would at least we have a central hub of that database that would allow us to be able to know who's on the list and what's the status, because maybe some of those can be more easily solved than others.
And I would think the council would want them to include any requests that would be feasible to include. Obviously, there's going to be some people that have forest AD zoning and they're requesting R5, which we probably can't do. But some of them might be much more reasonable than that, and the council might want them to include those in the comp plan update.
And Mark, is that something that you're supportive of, to have a list for these specific tax ID numbers?
Okay.
Yeah. And that is the hub that I'm talking about.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
What I'm running into along that line, people are becoming aware that we're working on the comp plan and
exactly.
the rezoning problem. So all of a sudden they jump up and say, well, what can I do with mine? Well, it can be addressed now through application, or it's already included in the comp plan. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that until we follow all the way through it.
Yeah, and that's where that central list grid would be very helpful. Anybody else want to weigh in on that?
And I'm not sure that's our only, I mean, that's our
an example.
Example that
okay.
We may be able to...
with that, how do you get back with the constituent and explain to them?
Whoever gets...
You just can't throw it on the pile and say,
no.
Your name
well,
on the pile.
That's where...
We'll manage it, and I would hope... I'm going on a limb here, but if you guys give us something to report back on, we report back on it, don't we? I mean, I try to.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I haven't got one of these yet, but if you give it to Mark, he gives it to us, we will give you the feedback on it.
Okay. Yeah, great. Okay.
Well, I was trying to get on this lady named Bev, I was trying to get more information. The first time it was very, very brief. The second I asked for address and parcels and then the more I looked at it, Kevin Prideboard's name came up. So apparently she's out of compliance, and one's in Duluth and one someplace else. So I'm trying to get as much information gathered together to give it to Mark.
And
so
that's where, Mark, if you want to be able to empower Axel and Peter to be able to be two-way communicators...
I think that's been my position all along.
Great.
What do we mean, two-way communicators? I'm sorry, I didn't follow.
I think Axel and Peter are both assets to the council as a group and as individual councillors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen a change.
I missed the link of what we're talking. How does that relate to?
If a constituent or a citizen calls in, they have a problem. They don't have to duplicate all the details of that problem. They can be Peter or Axel can talk with them, get all the specifics, and work with Mark to be able to get answers, and then follow through to if it's an acceptable thing, then they're solved. Their problems are solved. If it needs to come back to us for some other action to make it better, then they can.
And that already happens in many cases. Right. They go directly to you. In many cases, especially right now, they're coming to counselors and they're not.
Right, but what we're suggesting is the two-way communication is if you get an inquiry, mm-hmm. you are free to talk to Axel or to Peter about it and ask them to do research to inform you about what the situation is and what the possible resolutions might be.
And they may say, I'm already working on that, got it.
So when I get an email, and she gets an email, she goes to Axel, I go to Peter, then we don't duplicate once.
No, we talk.
Hey, we're looking better.
Yeah, that's right.
What happens is
we both get the email, then we bump in the hallway because we're trying to hand it off to each other. Hey, you want to do this, Peter? Hey, you want
to talk about the Woodland Chamber invoice?
Yeah, I better get done quickly.
Well, when I being that we just this showed up in the packet, I always want to do my due diligence.
I know about this, and you should know about
this. Well, we've done this several years running.
Several years running, and the representative from the board who sat on the tourism board was supposed to get this funded through tourism, and I think he's here.
Is he holding that piece of paper, or is he wearing a purple tie?
Wearing a purple tie.
I don't sit on the tourism board anymore. You do, right?
Nope.
Who does?
I don't know who sits on it.
Who'd you drop the ball on?
You can look it up.
Probably me, because, you know, I have the lion's share of those.
And don't think we don't appreciate it.
Yeah, you don't appreciate it. You don't. Hogwash, Tom.
Yeah, last time we talked about this, I thought it was that we would match whatever the tourism board would do up to that amount, up to 25,000.
No, just that they've got millions of dollars, and this is tourism connected to Clark County, and for the small amount that they're asking for from the tourism board, that it should be funded from there. That's what I thought you were doing.
My spot on it is that I don't have enough information right now to make a call on this. I just got this just before board time, and I need to be able to do my due diligence before I can make any decision on it.
What are you going to look at? what you did do?
Well, I'm not ready to elaborate on it. I got homework to do.
That's probably a good idea. I've got a. I can find out if the Woodland Chamber and the Visitors Bureau ever reached out to the Tourism Board.
In fact, a baffle on the side, because we couldn't give it to them, we gave it to the port or to the chamber, and I'm looking at what's attached here, and it looks like it's a line off. Can you look at...
No, it's there. It's listed as 2500. Clark County, 2500 to the Visitors Center. That's what they use it for. They use this money for their Visitors Center, not for their chamber. So they would, what they'd argue is this benefits... It benefits the visitors. It benefits Clark County because Woodland has one of the only visitor centers on
the If the chair wants to bring it back...
Here it shows 7500, and that's the point I'm making. We never gave them 7500. But if you drop down, we may have given them $5,000.
We used to give them five, then we dropped it to 2,500 last year.
And they're hopeful that we're going to give them five in the future.
Where is it on here?
Straight right across from Clark County.
Where's 2,500?
Right there.
Yep.
Clark County.
2,500 for 2014. Because
it says Clark County.
Yeah, that's a contribution from Clark County to the Visitors Bureau. 2,500. And they're asking for 5,000 this year.
What's all this other stuff? How's that connect?
Well, this is their whole budget. Our piece of their revenue budget is $2,500.
Oh, this is their budget.
This is their budget.
Yeah.
Oh. Didn't say that.
So revenue is at the top, expenses at the bottom.
Hey, Mr. General Manager.
Yeah, I had the facility spend an hour in here trying to locate the problem. They found some things that were loose. They tightened them up. It quieted down for a good period of time. It's back. We'll get them back to look again.
For a fee, I'll exercise the room.
Okay, so okay, you bring that back.
So we can bring that back.
Okay, thank you.
You might want to find out who's in charge of tourism.
Kim Bennett.
Who?
Well, no, from here. We have a voting...
We had a representative.
Okay. I thought the person in charge of the Tourism Bureau is Kim Bennett, but you want to know which of the counselors?
I used to sit on it. You can look at our commissioner.
I work with Kim Bennett on her board. Well, I'm assigned to that board. But it's not called Tourism Board, is it?
It's Vancouver USA or something.
Yeah, it's Vancouver Tourism Board.
Visit Vancouver.
Well, I think the Tourism Board is different, but it might be under her umbrella.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
so
I'll find out.
I'm going to bring that one back. 4.1.
Yeah, that's a work session requested by Don Benton.
I'm good with it.
Okay.
He's good with
four.
It. Just to schedule a work session.
So work session to talk about a couple projects. Okay. We need to approve them in order for them to be competitive for grants, grant monies.
You good to that? I'm good to that.
I got it.
All right.
Great.
Approved. All right. Anything else?
No.
Okay, Tom, you got anything else?
Happens to know. You want to sign these? I'll get them next week.
Mark, you got anything else?
I don't.
Peter, you got anything else?
Nope.
Okay, is motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right, we're adjourned. Thank you.
This is the conflict letter that Chris Horn asked for approval, so if you'll sign that.
Yeah.